COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Hello and welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show. Happy Labor Day to one and all. To those who celebrate, I guess we don't. It is the most interactive morning sports show. Talk show in Houston. Wait, the morning show took off? The morning show took off? Honestly, good for them.
Yeah, but Lance's still here, working hard, watching some Joe Moore Award stuff, and I think recorded a podcast for it.
Working hard, okay. Not doing what golfers do, which is have fun with the fellas.
A little calm A, a little calm B. Because he did cameo on Dell show, so.
Okay. Just stumbled down the hallway, steps in for a second, subjects the listeners of our station to whatever national programming there is.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more gets the day off while also getting credit for still being here on his day off. But more importantly, didn't have to wake up early to actually do a show.
There we go.
He gets to just roll in.
Rolls in.
Be like, hey, that offensive line looks bad. And keep it moving.
Well, it is the Paul Gallant Show. Hello and welcome aboard. It is the first day of September 2025, a Monday, and we appreciate you for tuning in. We assume most of you guys have the day off. You're driving around, maybe off to a pool party, hanging out with the family, about to put some burgers on the grill. I don't know why I had a lisp for that moment right there, but we just rolled with it for a moment. Lots of stuff to dive into on today's show. The Astros offense, get this, blows. They haven't scored in 300 days, give or take. And also, we've got some college football games to react to. Let's start with the most important one. I mean,
what a game by LSU, huh?
Woo-wee! You're right, Sean. The official Death Valley. It is LSU's now. And, you know, we also got to talk about the game. Syracuse, Tennessee. I got to say,
noon slate, or 11 a.m.
That was the longest game I've ever watched in my life. Go to Kirby Ice House with the girlfriend. I show up. Game kicks off at 11. Another game kicked off at 11:15, lapped it by halftime. There were cramps to the left. There were cramps to the right.
It's hot in the dome.
It was in effing side. I mean, that was not a fun experience for me, watching that game while trying to watch another game. A commercial break because somebody has a cramp. Commercial break because somebody has a cramp. Somebody was trying to get under my skin. Well, at least we're not Syracuse, said somebody while I watched this game. By the way, this person then outright said, Syracuse sucks, which led me to get up out of my chair and just start destroying this person verbally for a good, I would say, minute. Just a minute-long rant. Because it was a black, who I thought, Texas fan, who was talking trash to me, a Syracuse fan, in the midst of Syracuse getting smoked by Tennessee, while at the same time Texas was being the worst offensive team in college football. I guess a very good Ohio State defense. So this person just says outright, out loud, Syracuse sucks. My girlfriend's wearing a Syracuse hat, glares at him, never been more turned on in my life. Then I just stand up in my chair, and I'm thankful she's still with me after this moment, and I proceed to rant and say, hey, look at you. Your quarterback is the son of the Manning that was a failure. And guess what? He's doing Peyton Manning things in college like he did against Florida. By the way, fella, did you know that Syracuse beat Texas in the 1959 national championship because you guys were too racist to play black people? Do you remember that? I said all these things to him. Pause. And then, guess what happened? I'm a Cougs fan.
Whoops.
The Cougs might be dead to me now. Because of this guy, I might not be a Coug fan anymore. Because of this one guy, this kid wearing a red corn shirt to the game who was talking trash about my alma mater. Corn with a K, yes. That's the first time I've ever seen a black guy wearing a corn shirt. You know what? Hey, I appreciate his taste in music. I do like corn too. Freak on a Leash, great song. But that was my Saturday. Okay.
Del says that he doesn't appreciate that guy's taste in music, by the way.
He doesn't appreciate that guy's taste in music. Okay. I was so livid, and then all of a sudden the guy was like, "Oh, I'm not even a Texas fan." And I was like, "You a-hole!" But they got up and they left. But it was like a quarter of this, them making little comments, and I was just like, "Noted, noted, noted." Oh, I'm gonna drop the 1959 bomb on them when Texas was racist, by the way, because they were racist, and Syracuse beat them in a national championship game because of that.
Were racist?
Yes, yes, yes. Were, keyword. Do we want to talk about the game now?
I mean, I don't really want to talk about the game.
We got to talk about the game, Sean.
We do. I just will say I appreciate that you're Syracuse football's strongest soldier at all times.
Always.
You gotten into a – well, you didn't actually confront the guy, but you came close to
I stood up on a bar stool and started shouting at this person.
Oh, also, when we watched a Syracuse game together when we were in Las Vegas and
the Clemson guy who said, "Oh, it's football school."
Football school. And
all game long.
I could see the smoke coming out of
your
ear.
I was so pissed.
I appreciate that you ride for your guys. But yes, we will have to talk about
Tulane. And I can't believe
thank you for doing this.
They wouldn't let Northwestern wouldn't let Tulane wear the jerseys they want to wear. At Tulane Stadium? What?
Northwestern's the lamest J-school team in the world.
Got to say, this is probably on Tulane, and I think Tulane's making a huge deal about something like, what? Oh, these players are playing for a hurricane when none of them were alive when Hurricane Katrina happened. A little bit of a reach by the Tulane head coach there. Got to say, he's no Willie Fritz.
Got to use motivation, though. Got to get that motivation.
Got to use that motivation wherever you can find it. But we do have to talk about it. Oh, God, what an awful performance by Alabama. Dead. Alabama is dead.
Embarrassing.
It's just the worst. Honestly, the worst performance of the weekend is Alabama, and we will talk about Texas in just a second. But for all the hullabaloo about Texas, going on the road, losing to Ohio State 14-7 in a game where Arch Manning looked awful and the Texas offense looked awful, no one should be under more scrutiny and fire than a team that got its ass kicked by a program that took Bill O'Brien's sloppy seconds, a guy in Tommy Castellanos who talked bleep about Bama and actually backed it up. Florida State might be semi-back, but Alabama, dead. They are dead. Officially going forward, I'm an idiot for thinking that Alabama would win that game. Entirely based off of the motivational fuel. So many moments in that game. Go back and watch the highlights of randos in Alabama not hustling. Getting pancaked by wide receivers. Like, I saw a linebacker get pancaked by a wide receiver. I mean, wow. It's been 2 years, guys.
Yeah, I'm not fully ready to bury them, but they're not old Alabama.
No,
they're definitely not. And I'm not going to say they're just another very talented SEC team, because I think there's still a little bit more in the tank. But
Sean, they are the Alabama Crimson Shulas. They are not Alabama anymore. They are the Crimson Shulas. This is the Mike Shula era one more time. This is time to start looking at the next head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. D'Amico Ryans? I saw Jeremy Branham throw that out there. I was like, yeah, hell yeah, Jeremy. Hell yeah. Still got might be a holiday weekend.
D'Amico?
He's still trolling people out. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So Art sucked. He was sucked.
He was bad.
He sucked. Inaccurate. Held the ball too long.
Jittery.
Yeah. Some of the worst decisions that I can remember Manning making in quite some time. It looked rough. There's no denying that. But it's easy to pile on Arch Manning making his first start in Columbus against a national championship caliber team. By the way, they still had a chance at the very end.
I was going to say, he really earned a lot of, not like actual points, but a lot of my mental health points back. I think he was actually not bad in the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter, it wasn't bad.
It was like, oh, okay.
The touchdown pass he threw, balls he threw.
There's a little bit of like, oh, he got up off the mat, like mental toughness stuff.
There is a ceiling with Steve Sarkisian.
Ooh.
There is a ceiling. I mean, just look at the numbers from this offense that has had a lot of talent on it over the last few big games that they've played. 15 points against Georgia, 19 points against Georgia, 17 points against Texas A&M, 14 points against Ohio State, 7 points against Ohio State. And I mean, they had the ball on Ohio State's side of the field twice as much as Ohio State had the ball on Texas's side of the field. And I don't know if you want to go back to the college football playoff where there were some head-scratcher Sark decisions in the red zone, or if you want to go to Saturday where on third and goal from the one, hey, let's give it to Arch Manning up the middle. And then fourth and goal from the one, let's do the exact same thing that we just did. Buddy.
Yeah, you can't do the tush push, guys. Like, what are we, you don't have.
There's one team that can do it.
No one else should do it.
And they're an NFL team. And, I mean, Tom Brady was good at the quarterback sneak as well. Back-to-back plays with this. Come on. He's a big guy. He can run.
Yeah, I don't mind one, you know, quarterback keeper. Even if you want to give me a two quarterback keeper, that's fine. A, they shouldn't be back-to-back.
No.
B, like one of them can't be the tush push. Where you try to do the thing where you rush into it. Ohio State was all over it.
Yeah,
they're perfectly set up to stop that play.
They had 13 players in the box. I mean, it was so obvious.
They had four guys in between the two guards.
Exactly. To see that and think,
just run, call timeout. Just like, what are we doing?
Sarkisian's a great offensive mind. And you see that and you're like, oh, so we're going to do stuff that got the forward pass forced on college football by Teddy Roosevelt because players were dying.
Yeah.
Like, that was the kind of thing that deserved an intervention from perhaps a president. Run a naked bootleg. Run something to the outside. You did one on the inside. I don't know. Shake it up. So I'm looking at this. There's no denying Sark can recruit. There's no denying that Sark also has, in some moments, offensive touch. But the play calling, and now I see all the Texas people that have been saying this since last season really coming out with this. To me, that's a much bigger issue going forward than Arch Manning is. Arch Manning's first game, I thought it was going to be ugly. Julian Sain for Ohio State also said the same thing, thought it was going to be ugly. The only thing I really thought was going to happen in Saturday's game was, and I told you this, slam the under. That's the only thing I got right from the weekend in college football, but I know that was the one thing I felt confident. I was like, there's no way this game is getting combined into the 40s. Zero chance.
Didn't get halfway there.
Right, exactly. So, look, everyone's piling on Arch. I would say the people that are piling on Arch the most are probably Texas A&M fans in Oklahoma, and if you want to celebrate that, hey, all the power in the world to you. But I would just say everybody should be looking at Steve Sarkisian after this one and wondering, just how far can a guy like this take you when we now have a sample size with Texas as a favorite of just offensive issues? I mean, whether it's Quinn Ewers or it's Arch Manning, like, there's one commonality here, and it's Sarkisian, and it's just got to be better. And you would think that after a college football playoff performance, where the offense struggled the way that it did, especially in the red zone with, you know, the fumble six that iced the game, that Steve Sarkisian's first game, I mean, he would be just doing all sorts of exotic stuff, spicing things up, you know, like give the offense a little lingerie or something. And instead, it's the same thing that makes you feel like you're watching a Marcel Reed offense from last year, or the Colin Klein, whatever Colin Klein wants to do with the Aggies. This is not meant to throw the Aggies under the bus here. But last year, like, there was a very clear thing that, hey, A&M wants to run the ball. Texas felt Stone Age on Saturday.
Yeah, and it wasn't even – they weren't creative with how they were running the ball.
Right.
Like, there's zero creativity because you're right about, like, the Steve Sarkisian discourse was, like – you see it in the big national broadcasts or when people, like, are nationally talking about Steve Sarkisian. They just say, great play caller, Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, he's a good offensive mind. He's a good game planner. Like, he's good, like, if you give him the a week to, like – microscope in on something that works, but he is not actually a good like play caller. Like he actually does not call plays very well. It is more of the he can walk into a week knowing what will work.
Perfect example of this. Go back 2 years ago when they're playing Alabama first game of the year. They thought Alabama's secondary sucked, and we're like, we're just gonna chuck it.
Yeah.
And it worked. And
yeah.
Ewers looked awesome until he got hurt. You're right. Totally agree with you there. And at some point, you got to adapt, and that's what it feels like with Sarkisian. It hasn't happened. And now I wonder, what's the next step for them? I mean, you're playing three scrubs in a row, so you can experiment theoretically, but the game to experiment is against the probably top five defense at the end of the year that you're playing on the road again.
Yeah, what I would say is that like we're right about how this game would go, but I really only thought it would be like the first half or the first three quarters. And then the game would kind of open up. Like, I understand why they were so conservative early, but they were conservative the entire game. Until they had to start throwing, like, they were running the ball on first and second down every single time. No motion. Joel Klatt was, like, slowly going insane on the broadcast. He was like, you know, we haven't seen – it started with – we haven't seen a lot of the motion and screen stuff where you would think that would get the young quarterback. And then he was like, you know, maybe they go some mixed direction. It was like as the announcer, like, turning up the dial on criticism of, like, I don't want to bury this guy. But, like, they were just lining up and running Stone Age football where it kind of – it worked better than passing it. I'll give them that. But it was not going to win you that game. They needed – I felt like they needed to get Arch some easy stuff to get him in the game. I felt like they needed a couple screens. Just get the ball out of his hands. Get some yards outside the numbers. And, yeah, run them. I do feel like you touched on Marcel Reed. I think when they at some point in that game, they should have realized, like, actually, we should just run a running quarterback offense with this guy.
Yeah, run the Wildcat, man.
It's the biggest, like, you know, if his name wasn't Manning, he probably would be running a lot more.
Yeah.
They wouldn't go into this, well, we're just going to drop him back and have him make reads.
That was his biggest trait last year. I mean, they brought him in red zone situations because he's good running with the football. And instead, I do not know what they were trying to do on Saturday. I really don't.
It was disgusting game plan.
And I mean, Sarkisian, think about this if you're Steve Sarkisian. And we're going to continue to rub his face in it because everyone's doing it with Arch Manning. And it's easy to do it with Arch Manning.
And we're not letting Arch off the hook.
He sucked.
He was bad. But
got better as the game went on.
Got better, and there's a longer runway for him. This is year three of Steve Sarkisian doing this, where I've talked about it before, too. It's funny that Steve Sarkisian's great offensive mind, the last two years, the best Texas teams he's had, defensive juggernauts.
Yeah, exactly. It's been about the defense the last two seasons. And if you're Sark, you should look in the mirror and say, damn, I just got cooked game plan-wise by a guy who on the sideline looks disheveled and at one point had a pencil that was in his ear pocket with a laminated play card in New England. Good for Matt Patricia. Good for Ryan Day and his freaky little pierced nipple ring. Good for Ohio State. They deserve a lot of credit for the way that they played that game. But Texas came into the year with all that hype and all that offensive power, you would think. And this offensive play caller and this quarterback. And I mean, here we are again. You know, there's a lot of season left. Season's far from over. It's the third ranked team, probably going to be first ranked team in the country. I don't know if the rankings have come out. It's Labor Day. So I don't know,
it comes out.
Because there's one more game tonight, right? It's North Carolina's game. So shout out to Bill Belichick, my guy. But this was a rough one for Steve Sarkisian more than anybody, even though Mark Manning also stunk.
Yeah.
713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. We're just going to do a double segment here. From the 713, game was too big for Manning. Missed easy side slant throws. Close throws seems like he was trying to play frisbee golf. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that this one was too big because it did feel like when you're missing throws the way that he was missing them, jitters had to be associated with this.
It was just 100 miles per hour every single time.
And I mean, I understand how because the guy was put on just an outrageously high pedestal going into the season.
Fox ran a Rinaldi segment about him like 5 minutes before the game started.
Yeah. Paul Feinbaum, who is Paul Feinbaum, and yeah. The guy just throws chum in the water.
Just carnival barker.
For Southerners to get pissed off about.
Hell yeah.
But he compared Art to, as I said, this is the greatest quarterback we've seen since Tim Tebow, which is sacrilegious in my opinion, because Tebow's the greatest college football quarterback of this century, in my opinion. No offense to all the Vince Young fans out there. I know you exist. It was one year.
I'd say Cam Newton, but
Cam Newton as well. That works. It's like they had some good years. There's no denying that. But there was so much put on his shoulders going into this. This was the natural byproduct.
Yeah.
And I don't even think it necessarily means he's out of the running for the rest of the season in the Heisman, but this certainly hurts. And he's going to have to actually look like a plus guy if you want to put him back into that conversation against the SEC teams as the season goes along.
Yeah, for the Arch Manning discourse, there's really like nothing he can do the next three games.
This is the next three, it's like, oh, he's beating up ULM again. Huh? Yeah.
And then a bye week, and then they go to the Swamp.
And then against DJ Lagway in Florida, correct. Yeah. From the 409... I thought every college football game this weekend drug for a long-ass time. It is the thing that you always forget about in your football slumber, in your football coma, when you have no football and you're just waiting for it to come back. College football is really just directing double rods your way. I know that watching the game live, because I watched the replay condensed 45-minute version of Texas-Ohio State yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. The Syracuse-Tennessee game on ESPN versus the Ohio State-Texas on Fox. Like, that game for Texas-Ohio State starting 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
And lapping the Syracuse-Tennessee game by halftime. I wonder if this is going to be a season where the Fox games are quicker. Obviously, Texas and Ohio State, there wasn't a lot of offense going on.
They were just running it into the line a lot. So there's some of that, but I agree with you. That is, like, the one, especially the Island games, like yesterday's both games. Virginia Tech and South Carolina and Miami and Notre Dame, where it's like, man, I like on Saturday I can flip around, I can go back to the quad box, I can you know, look around. This, when you're just stuck with one game, you're like, wow, they are going to a lot of commercials.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's one of the things. I mean, we'll have the same thing on Thursday with the NFL too, but it is something of like, yeah, these games are long.
They take a while. NFL
college
games,
especially. High-scoring college games take like 4.5
minutes. And then you get the stupid-ass halftime show. I'm sorry. Yeah. F the bands. I've said that before. F the bands, just like F Kirk Herbstreit's dog. That dog sucks. Took a dump on national TV. I threw that out there. I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Lee Corso's got to fly in Southwest, but Kirk Herbstreit's dog, the replacement for the dying dog that he was allowed to bring with him as if it was a service dog, which I'm sure of all the people out there, Kirk Herbstreit probably has service dog certification, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, for that dog. That dog takes a dump, and that kid who gets the $250,000 field goal, like his shoes have been ruined. His shoes have been ruined by Peter the dog's poo. Because dog people, they just can't help themselves. And I love dogs. But the dog people that, well, he never does that always bring their dog around that's poorly trained, it's a reflection of them. And I mean, Kirk, listen, dog, I get that it's demanding to know all this ins and outs for a college football game and for an NFL game on Thursdays. Kirk, you have plenty of offseason to train that dog. Plenty of offseason. And it just runs on the screen, takes a dump, and then is off on its merry way.
Yeah, you're rich. You can afford Caesar Milan.
Yes, or you could do it yourself, like a man, but it's fine. From the 713. On the most interactive sports talk show in town. Hang on a second. All of a sudden it's popping up. They gave him easy stuff, and he missed them. Even his passes to the flat sucked. Arch and Sark were terrible. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. No, they got... Oh, Arch was bad. He was just inaccurate and I hope jittery. Or he's just super inaccurate. I don't think he's that inaccurate. Yeah. I don't think he's... I mean, that was worse than like Trevor Lawrence misfire stuff.
That's an accurate comparison because Lawrence has all the things that you want in a quarterback. But for whatever reason...
Just like...
He just sails passes all the time, and he seems to have, like, no awareness at all. And you're wondering, hey, if I were to control him in a video game, I'd be so great with him. And that's how Arch looked. But it is Arch's first game against a real team on the road early in the year. There are excuses to be made for Arch. There are no excuses to be made for Sark. Yeah. That's why Sark should be getting crushed more than Arch today if you're going to crush anybody for Texas's loss 14-7 to Ohio State on Saturday. One text at the, just to wrap things up. From the 409, can we talk about how ridiculous it was to have a 1-3 game start at 11 a.m.? That is on Fox. Fox is trying their best to compete with ESPN, and the way that they can is that they have the big game in that 11 a.m. window, because that generally is the window where you can't have a big game. So they're like, we're going to corner this to compete with College Game Day and everything ESPN has to do. And now that Lee Corso, tip of the cap, he nailed all of his picks to wrap up his career, which was awesome. And even Fox even broadcast Corso's pick, which was also very cool.
Simulcast.
It was cool. I'm really happy for Lee Corso to go out like that. But that's what Fox does. Got to get used to it, you know?
Yeah.
Be thankful if you're a fan of an SEC school or a Big 12 school, like you probably are listening to this show. Just be thankful you're not a Big 10 school, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's...
Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, and honestly, the West Coast Big
12
schools.
Yeah, imagine being a West Coast Big 10 school. They get like, that skate, sucks.
Yeah, well, at least they don't have to host those games. But yeah, those...
9 a.m. games.
Yeah, those three teams are just going to be the big noon kickoff game
probably
every single week. Maybe Colorado mixed in there.
Sean Mace behind the glass and Paul Gallant. Happy Labor Day. It's the Paul Gallant Show. ESPN at 97.5, 72.5, 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. If you want to weigh in on college football's first weekend. Also, the Astros have lost their last two games. And offensively, good God, they have been putrid. Is September going to be any different? They have an opportunity to change that this afternoon. One last game against the Angels, looking to avoid losing that four-game series. We'll talk about that on the flip side. Stick around. The Astros still have a two-game lead in the American League West. They still lead the Texas Rangers by 4.5 games for the final wild card spot, even if they don't end up clinching the division. But the more and more this season drags on, the worse and worse you feel about this team at the plate. Have you seen some of these numbers for the Astros going into this afternoon's game? They haven't scored in 15 innings. That is true. Three runs their last three games. Two runs or fewer in 11 of their last 18 games. Through three games against the Angels, 3-for-27 with runners in scoring position, 24 left on base, just four extra base hits all weekend. Since July 13th, they are 26th in baseball in OPS, 24th in batting average with runners in scoring position, 27th in on-base percentage with runners in scoring position. Over the past month, only one team scored less than the Astros, the Cleveland Guardians. And I mean, it's been a week of the Astros going up against pitchers with ERAs that are ranging from 5 to, I think, 8 starting pitchers. Because that's what happens when you play teams like the Rockies and the Angels. Joe Espada said this after yesterday's game. Quote, I think that we've been through some stretches where we see some signs of, here we go, we're starting to click. And then we run into a couple of decent arms. What? Who are the decent arms? Who are the decent arms? You're going up against guys that have Chaz McCormick adjacent ERAs. This is their primary job. These guys are bums. And this is all you're able to do offensively? I mean, it's a miracle that the last 2 months the Astros were respectively 13-15 in August, 12-13 in July. This past month, at home, they averaged 2.4 runs a game. I'm surprised we haven't heard any bitching and moaning about the hitter's eye again. At least they're scoring 4.4 runs a game on the road, but there have been so many opportunities for the Astros to build on their lead. And I did say that in September, just taking a look at the Astros schedule against the Mariners schedule, I think there's a chance that the Astros are leading to the AL West by 4-5 games. And then it's a matter of, can they hang on with the Mariners having an easier schedule to wrap up September than the Astros? But here we are. And somehow, some way, this American League West, it just keeps on kicking itself in its penis. Which is hard to do, but that's what they're doing. They're tripping all over it. I mean, the Rangers, I guess, are kind of slowly clawing their way back into the conversation. They would be, I think, the third and final wild card team if the season were to end today. They're just 4.5 games back of the Astros now. Mariners somehow, some way, have not been able to gain any ground on the Astros in these last 2 weeks, which is also wild to think of.
It's gone longer than 2 weeks, but in the last 10 games, the Astros are 6-4. The Mariners are 5-5. I feel like that just perfectly sums up what the AL West race is right now, where the Astros are playing 500 baseball against the worst teams in the league, so they get one extra win here and there, whereas the Mariners are also playing 500 baseball against a better schedule, so they go 5-5 instead of 6-4. That's the difference.
Oof. It's not looking too packed at Daikin Park today. Got the broadcast on. They're doing the pregame show. And I suppose there's 40 minutes or so, 30-40 minutes until first pitch. But
another hour before most people show up.
I wouldn't want to go to today's game. I wouldn't. If I'm an Astros fan. Mainly because I'm just annoyed by the offense. I mean, it should be better. Altuve, by the way. Good God. Did you see his number since August 12th?
No, I'm scared.
190. With a 567 OPS since August 12th.
Not good.
And he had a two-hit game over the weekend. Still doing that poorly.
He's going to need a lot more two-hit games to turn those numbers
for
around.
For sure. Or just one-hit games. I mean, a one-hit game would do enough.
Going 1-for-5 would raise his average.
We're just shooting for 250 here.
Yeah.
Yordan doesn't seem to have a lot of pop since coming back. I know he had the homer, but I've seen people bitching and moaning. Well, Yordan's a singles merchant now. And okay. I mean, at least he's out there. But this offense, are we now at a point where we're accepting that this is what it is and it's not the injuries? I think we got to be there, just to be honest. You know, we've been holding out hope for a while. It's a long season, marathon, blah, 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 blah. They're so hurt. Yeah, but this was happening when they were healthy. I mean, where would this lineup be without Jeromy Peña? And sure, Christian Walker's been better recently. And Yiner Diaz, I guess the hand issue is not as big of an issue as we thought it might be, just because we always assume the worst with injuries. And hell, knock on wood, for all I know, that's gonna end up being an issue today. But the offense just stinks. This is one of the worst hitting teams in baseball.
Yeah, yes. And you have all your guys except Jake Meyers, but
Zach DiCenzo's coming back soon, too, maybe.
Yeah, but you have all your guys. It's the right guys in the lineup. It's the guys that you would think would be in any big game postseason lineup that matters. It's all out there for you, and they're not getting the job done. And I don't know if it's as simple as just Yordan Alvarez needs to get going and then everything else kind of clicks into place around that, or if it's more piecemeal, more it needs to, you know, come more, you know, I guess momentum where one guy leads to another. But we've seen all year where it's runners in scoring position. They can't get the guy over. They can't get that single to score a run. So, yeah, it is.
And this is a playoff team that's been through the wars, blah, blah, blah.
You are who you are at this point.
Yeah. It should be better. It's not. This offense is making me want to watch tennis. It's making me want to watch the U.S. Open so I can watch a kid try to get an autograph only for some Polish billionaire to steal it and then say publicly afterwards, it's his fault. He should have been faster. It's making me want to watch soccer, especially if in Miami, Seattle, we see more, you know, as he does, Luis Suarez doing things with his mouth, whether it's biting somebody or this time spitting on a person. Mm. That's the big story in soccer today. Inter Miami forward Luis Suarez
spits on
someone. Who bit a guy once. Yeah, he's spitting on a Seattle Sounders staffer because there was a little shoving match after the game.
That's a step in the right direction. Not to go full Jerry Jones talking about that guy who got popped for speeding twice in the same offseason and goes, well, he was going 68 the next time. So he's going in the right direction.
Bite to spit.
Yeah, but I think that's in the right order, right?
Right.
Biting is worse than spinning.
Right. Biting is awful. As someone who...
It's an actual, like, bodily assault.
Yeah.
Spitting is, like, more disrespectful.
Well, biting breaks the skin, and, like, yeah. You could get sick from it. As someone who, in third grade, I collided with Nancy Kerrigan's cousin, Nancy Kerrigan, the figure skater, and his front teeth went into my forehead, and I shattered his front teeth, and I was in the hospital because I kept my forehead kept getting infected, and my face kept on swelling up, and I did not look like a white man anymore. Like, it was wild how crazily, it was nuts. It was weird. And I was out of school for like a month dealing with a kid's teeth breaking the skin of my forehead and giving me a little Harry Potter scar.
It's crazy that can just happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's nuts that
people stitched it together too. They're like, yeah, I'll be fine. I was like, I just got bitten by someone. What are you talking about? And then, so then I got infected. And then they did it again after cleaning it out, got infected again. So they had to do some wacky thing. I was out of school for a month. It was crazy. Just for colliding with somebody playing tag. Like, it wasn't – and people thought I was dying. Like, they gave me letters and stuff. It's crazy. Because I remember, like, it hurt when it happened. And it was weird to see, like, my skull. But, like, after that, I mean, it wasn't
– They almost got a hashtag started.
No, seriously.
Paul, like, Strong.
They sent me letters home. I was out for that long. It was
We're thinking
crazy.
About you, Paul.
And I was doing schoolwork at home, too, because I was fine. I didn't even get to have fun at home and play, you know, Quarterback Club 97 or whatever video game I was playing at the time. And, I'm just sitting at home because Nancy Kerrigan's cousin's teeth went into my forehead. And he had to, like...
Brush your teeth, kid.
I don't think that does anything.
Oh, okay.
There's so much germs.
I want to blame it on that kid.
No, I don't. No, Mike was a good kid. Mike was one of my friends. Yeah. Just, we were the two fastest kids in the school, and boom, you know? Blood everywhere. So it was the one time, too, that we did not, because Catholic schools in Massachusetts, generally where the kids were allowed to play, were in a parking lot. So we would play in a parking lot every single day. Like, we would be playing two-hand-touch football in a parking lot. And then we one time we're on a grass field, like catastrophic injury. Kid bleeds everywhere. Makes no sense. Anyway, Paul Gallant Show, 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitch at ESPN 975. Speaking of injuries, Luis Garcia back on the hill for the first time in quite some time. What are you expecting from him today? And also, the Astros might be getting a lawsuit in the near future after a dude almost died over the weekend. What are we talking about? Stay put. He had a Paul Gallant with Michael Kerrigan situation. The most interactive sports talk show in town. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. We'll get back to talking about the disappointing loss for Texas against Ohio State and some of the other things that we saw over the first real weekend of college football. Astros are trying to avoid losing 3 of 4 against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. This afternoon, Luis Garcia back for the Astros today. So we know the Astros offense is probably going to give us a little bit more of the same. Hopefully, Luis Garcia's Rock the Baby is looking a lot like it did at the beginning of, was it last season? It feels like it was so long ago. Where he actually looked pretty good his first couple of starts after changing his motion up to abide by baseball's pitch clock. And then, you know, Astros training staff / medical staff things happened.
It was 2023. His last start was May of 2023.
So it was right after the pitch clock. Yeah. And we were all wondering, hey, man, what's going to happen?
Good God, time flies. I feel like it was just yesterday.
I saw something. I'll pull it up later, but I saw something of this was the Astros lineup the last time Luis Garcia pitched. We can go through that later.
All right, we'll wait on that. I don't want to get depressed. Because this Astros lineup should be statistically a lot better than it is, as we obviously highlighted in the last segment. But as far as the Astros are concerned, whenever we're talking about this team, I feel like conversations always end up coming back to talking about the injury side of things. A special edition of Astros ER, because this time we're talking about an injury to another player.
If I expose exactly what's wrong with it, which will hurt him and hurt us.
He don't really know how he hurt it. Sometimes you wake up sore, hurting. You know, he's laughing a little bit more. And
he wasn't crying, but he had tears inside.
Brantley's doing fine.
He said he's feeling better.
It's not a strong shoulder, so he should be fine.
I'd like to think I have healing power, but I don't.
This is a house of learned doctors.
Yesterday, Angels outfielder Taylor Ward was trying to catch a ball against the Crawford boxes in that little spot of the Crawford boxes where there's essentially just it just juts out. And then all of a sudden, immediately afterwards, it goes straight back to where the left field fence should be, the brick wall where the bullpen is. And Ward just runs right in to the corner of the Astros metal scoreboard. And it is very clear right away, because he's calling for people to come onto the field to help him out before the play is even done, that he is leaking. He is leaking a lot. Someone from the bullpen for the Angels came out, gave him a towel. Seems like he stopped the bleeding, but after 10 minutes or so, Ward was carted off to an ambulance waiting in the tunnel. Seems like he didn't suffer a concussion, but he did certainly suffer a scar to his face. And I guess this is not the first time that baseball has caused him a face injury, because he also, I think, got hit in the face by a fastball at one point in time. Yeah, that'll make you scared to play baseball out there. People are dumping on the Astros for having a metal scoreboard in their outfield. I know they're not the only team to have a metal scoreboard in their outfield, because I believe the Red Sox scoreboard at Fenway Park is still metal. When I was a little kid on a tour of Fenway Park, I actually tapped it once. I was like, oh, this would not feel good to run into. And every now and then you would hear a ball hit that spot and it would make quite the clank. Yeah. Alden Gonzalez is a reporter for ESPN. Posted this: feel terrible for Taylor Ward, who once took a fastball to the face and now had this happen. The same organization that thought it'd be a good idea to put a hill in its outfield still has a metal out-of-town scoreboard in the field of play. Stupid. I mean, they probably should just stop having the metal scoreboards. Why not have, you know, an electronic one? It would probably be a lot easier, but that also, I would assume, would be metal. There's no real solution for this other than just having padding over the entirety of that wall. And I don't know, man. I mean, I know that there's going to be some lawyer out there who says, hey, yeah, he would have a case if he were to sue Daikin Park. But I don't know. Doesn't this just happen? Isn't this just happens in this beautiful game in America's pastime? Like, every now and then someone's going to run into the outfield and start bleeding everywhere?
Honestly, in like 20 years, this hasn't happened. Like, this is 25 years?
That's a good point,
like,
Sean.
This is
not in my time covering the team. Yeah. I can't remember a guy hitting his head on the outfield wall
and needing
and bleeding everywhere and needing stitches, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, like, unfortunate, but I agree with you. I don't know how dire of a situation this
is.
I think
not. This is an easy thing to get people mad at, because everyone hates the Astros. Oh, they stole Sasha. Yeah, they have a metal scoreboard. But I'm assuming that there's probably at least five teams in baseball that have a metal scoreboard. How many?
Yeah, I mean, you're right about the electronic ones. I know those, they normally have like some sort of like chain link fence, basically, with padding around it that blocks those. But I mean, you're still talking about chain link. Now there's more give to that, so I guess that's where the, you know, it's a little safer than just a metal wall or a metal card.
Fenway Park is the only 100% manually operated scoreboard in Major League
Baseball.
Oh yeah,
there's like a guy in there.
I would assume there is for the Astros one as well, too, right? Like, don't they have?
It looks manual, too.
It looks old. Maybe it isn't. Wrigley Field also has a large manually operated scoreboard with steel plates and a 1937 relay system. So we're not getting mad at the Red Sox. We're not getting mad at the Cubs. But we will get mad at the Astros because they're the Astros. That's what this is more so about, the hullabaloo over
there. And it's just like the time it happened this weekend. You know, like, yeah. I'm sure, like, if this happened in Wrigley or Fenway, they'd be like, time to update these old whatever. But I think that's where Minute Maid loses the credibility. It's like, why are you doing this? Like, the two of the oldest stadiums in baseball. It's like,
I kind of like it, though. I think it's aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, and it makes sense that, the Crawford boxes are kind of just the Green Monster, just a little remixed.
Yeah.
It's an homage.
For sure.
To the Green Monster. So, yeah. When I first saw it, I thought he was going to hit the, 90-degree angle part of it. And that, I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the corner? Yeah, that would be crazy.
Probably throw a pad on that.
Exactly. Like what you would have with your toddler if you have a couple of pointy tables and counters and stuff like that. And also, it's not like the warning track is... I mean, he walks longer than you normally would walk on a warning track. Because that warning track in the corner is actually a little bit bigger there than it is anywhere else.
Yeah, just angled, it looks like.
No, he honestly, I'm watching the replay. This is kind of on him,
I'll say he doesn't look very coordinated.
No, he doesn't. It's
because he kind of flips his body around.
I think he missed it too.
Oh, he 100% missed it.
Yeah, completely missed it. And then he just ate.
The center fielder had to run over and field it. Yeah.
I'm just right now on my computer. I'm just going up to the part where his face is the wall. Ooh.
I am also. It's like four Ooh. Seconds in, or 5 seconds.
I've just watched this. I'm holding manually pulling the cursor for it. Pow! Right in the kisser. Pow! Right in the kisser. Like, I'm just.
Can we get someone to put sonic rings on him?
Or add a Batman sound effect as he runs into the wall.
Bang!
Bang! Seems like he's okay. From the 832, didn't Aaron Judge run through an outfield wall and hurt his shoulder one time? I believe they did.
I remember that. I forgot where it was.
I don't think they banned that wall either, another texter from the 281. Run into a wall? Stupid. For the 832, scoreboard's been out there since 2000. All of a sudden, it's an issue?
Yeah.
That is wild. There has to have been another moment where a guy hurt himself running into that wall, but maybe not. Maybe this Taylor Ward guy is like the most uncoordinated person ever. One last one from the 713. This is not about the actual ballpark. Hey, guys. I think where the Astros are having trouble is in their mental approach to the at-bat. They're trying to swing for the fences instead of hitting in a way the situation calls for. I think that's on the hitting coaches and a lack of communication between players as to how a pitcher is pitching. They need to get back to basic hitting, not hero hitting. I like this. Hero ball. I think Altuve said something along those lines after yesterday's game. Yeah, you have to have the correct approach at the plate. You have to have a game plan. You have to stick to it. It does feel like the Astros have not exactly stuck to their preseason plans this season at the plate as well. It is just weird, especially now that they're healthy again, how bad all season long they've been with runners in scoring position. It is very strange, the dichotomy between having a top 10 batting average and a bottom 10 run score. Weird. That's Astros ER, everybody. Sean Mace behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. Most interactive sports talk show in town. It is the Paul Gallant Show. Happy Labor Day. Stay put.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide.
Open up a world of travel possibilities with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.